Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
If you were with us on yesterday's program, you noticed that Brad's voice was starting to go out on him. Well, he's come down with a cold. And a call has been made to the bullpen, baseball reference. And it's me, Jeff Munn, ASU Women's Basketball Radio play-by-play announcer, among other things. And I'm filling in for Brad today on this Thursday on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Good to have you with us. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with AZCentralSports.com. And, yeah, I joked with a buddy of mine. I'll tell the whole story a little bit later on, but I'm leaving a friend's house after the baseball game, and I said, hey, I'm doing Brad's show tomorrow. I think we're going to lead with the Suns. And he looked at me like, what? But no. No, we will talk Suns a little bit later on. They actually had a terrific win last night over Portland downtown at Talking Stick Resort Arena. But on the show today, in addition to what I'll be talking about with you, Jimmy Vaccaro, our friend from the South Point Hotel Casino Resort, which was a trifle busy last night, especially in his department, will be on to talk about the football weekend. Bill Gutekunst will be with us for his weekly visit, AZ Central film critic. Three terrific movies that he will review this week. And we'll get into a little bit of a discussion, too, I promise, about somebody that I'm probably going to take a few shots at before we get to Bill's interview, but I'll explain it in a minute. The whole gang's here. Jordan Hamm, Eric Sorensen's over there. Hello, Eric. He's waving.
Hello, Mom.
Now he's talking. It's nice to have you.
Nice to see you.
Nice to be seen.
And thanks for pinch hitting. Another baseball term. You love that, don't you?
Pinch hitting's all I do these days.
Indeed.
But more about that on a future program. Obviously, the topic of the day is Game 7 of the World Series. I'm going to go into my thoughts about the game. If you're just coming in from a flight from Mars, the Cubs did win the game 8-7 in 10 innings. And instead of before we get into a dissecting of the contest, one of the things I really tried very hard to download on my phone the Cubs radio broadcast because I wanted to hear Pat Hughes call the final out. I couldn't do it, but we do have it. And as they say in show business, roll 'em.
The Cubs are one out away from winning the title. And Cub fans, you are going to remember where you were right now for the rest of your life. It'll be Mike Montgomery to try to get the final out. Two down. Cubs lead by a run. Tying run at first. Martinez at the plate. A little bouncer slowly toward Bryant. He will glove it and throw to Rizzo. It's in time. And the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. The Cubs come pouring out of the dugout, jumping up and down like a bunch of delirious 10-year-olds. The Cubs have done it. The longest drought in the history of American sports is over, and the celebration begins. It's never felt better to fly the W. Great scene on the field, bear hugs, absolute joy. The Cubs have done it. Their first world title since 1908.
I will tell you this. First of all, a personal thought. Pat Hughes, who I got to know very well through my time with the D-backs, is one of the great gentlemen in baseball play-by-play announcing, and he's also an excellent broadcaster. And he is also part of the reason that I am such a fan of his personally is he has a great reverence for the craft and the art of baseball broadcasting. If you're kind of an old guy like me and you're into old-time baseball announcers, and old-time meaning the Vin Scullys, Jack Bucks, Harry Careys of the world, just Google Pat Hughes' name. He did a series of CDs several years ago highlighting different legendary baseball announcers, their calls, and he gave kind of a college lecture type examination of their talents and abilities. Fascinating stuff, and I recommend it if you're into baseball and baseball broadcasting on the radio. Okay, the game itself.
Can I just say one thing?
Yeah,
just real quick.
Yes, sir.
And because I'd love to get your take on this.
Yes.
So after the final out was recorded, the only thing I could think about after Anthony Rizzo took that baseball and shoved it in his back pocket.
Smart move.
Is, number one, where is that baseball going to end up? And number two, if you could put a value on a piece of merchandise, how much would someone pay, where money is no object, to have that baseball in a safe, in their den, in their sports memorabilia room.
It's amazing that I hadn't thought about that before now, but you're talking seven figures.
For sure. And would the Baseball Hall of Fame, I know I had a close friend who used to work for the Baseball Hall of Fame, and the Hall of Fame has to ask the player or the team for the memorabilia. It's not like the Hall of Fame can just go in and say, hey, we need that baseball. I wonder if the Cubs are going to give the Hall of Fame that baseball, if Rizzo's going to hold on to that baseball.
Let me answer it this way. I don't know Anthony Rizzo at all, never met him.
Seems like a stand-up guy, though.
Yeah,
a good person.
He seems to be a guy that has a really good grasp of the magnitude of what took place last night. And because of that, my guess is he gave the ball to Tom Ricketts or Crane Kenny, the business manager, or to Theo Epstein.
Good point.
And it'll be their call to decide what to do with it. The other thing tied to it, and I mentioned this to a friend of mine, and I'll tell this story later on in the show if I have time, but I was with a friend last night who's a lifelong Cub fan, and when they gave Ben Zobrist the MVP, and it was a much cleaner presentation than Chevrolet's done in past years, they gave him a Camaro that they had out on the field, and that was one sweet-looking ride.
Yeah, it was a nice car.
And I thought to myself, Ben Zobrist's a pretty stand-up guy. I wouldn't be surprised if he decided to either donate that car to a charity or just auction it off for charity purposes. A lot of players do that, and I'll bet Ben Zobrist might do it. Although if he decides he wants to keep it, I don't blame him a bit. The game itself, and there's a lot of ways we could go with this. A lot of people are saying it's the greatest game ever played. It'd be hard to argue. Greatest game in the sense that, and for context, everybody around the NFL, the 1958 overtime game, Colts-Giants, they say it's the greatest game ever played, but it wasn't the cleanest game ever played in terms of there were a lot of mistakes. But for drama and for strategy, it was probably the greatest game ever played, and for what was at stake. And I think this is the same thing in relation to Game 7 last night. It was not a perfectly played baseball game. It was not a perfectly managed baseball game by any stretch of the imagination. And I am a Joe Maddon fan. I marvel at the guy. I have my issues, and I'll get into this later if I have time, about how he got to Chicago. But bottom line, I do think Joe Maddon horribly overmanaged that game. There was no reason to pull Kyle Hendricks out in the fifth inning of that contest. None. And especially when you go to Lester, you have to bring in David Ross with him. So you're not only taking a pitcher out, you're taking Wilson Contreras out. To me, that makes it doubly nonsensical to make the move at that point. There are other things that I thought were badly handled. Chapman in the eighth. No, he's your ninth inning guy. For crying out loud, he said, I want to pitch the ninth. Let him pitch the ninth. You don't even go to extra innings. The other thing, and this was one, I was just joking with somebody earlier. I hate to blow my cover, but I do tend to use language from time to time. I don't use it here. That you may not want your kids to hear some words, and I'm Catholic, so it's like, forgive me. But when Javi Baez squared to bunt with two strikes, what looked like a squeeze play, there was a lady in the room, and I used language I should never use, and my mother would whip my behind if she knew what kind of words came, and she probably did, knew what kind of words came out of my mouth when I saw that. So in that respect, I'm just going to say this, and I know in the euphoria of the moment for Cubs fans, the Cubs won that game in spite of Joe Maddon. Maddon, there's a great temptation to overmanage in the postseason, make too many moves. And Matt, I think that's what happened with Maddon last night. The other thing, and it'll kind of get swept under the rug, is a lot of people complained about Aroldis Chapman's ability to field his position. What about John Lester last night on that little nubber up the third baseline? Could he have gotten off the mound? He could have. Now, the reason he didn't is not because he's lazy. It's because he just has such a problem throwing to first base, throwing on a pickoff attempt. And David Ross had to go out and try to make the play on his own. It was not a clean baseball game. It was highly dramatic. I feel for the people of Cleveland because from the beginning of the series to the end, they have been completely swept under the rug by the national media. Fox did the best they could to be as balanced as they could. Fox, balanced. Isn't that concept? Fox did it, and Fox did a terrific job with this series. John Smoltz is the superstar from a media standpoint of the series. I thought Joe Buck did a terrific job handling the play call last night. His call of Rajai Davis's home run is one of those make the hair stand up on the back of your neck kind of moments. He nailed it. And I'm a guy that anytime there's a big baseball game, I secretly wish Al Michaels was calling it. And Al Michaels would have just had a field day with that game last night. But overall, thought the telecast was great, thought the game was great. I thought it did tremendous things for the game of baseball. And later on in the show today, I'm going to talk a little bit about what it means for the industry of baseball. And it also teaches a very serious lesson to a lot of teams in this sport about the proper way to go about building a championship. And again, you're going to try to make 2 and 2 add up to 67. No, I'm not pointing this at any one specific team, but I'll just point that out later on the show. What the Cubs story really teaches us about how to go about building a championship team in this day and age in Major League Baseball. And we didn't even get to talk about the Suns game. We'll do it later on in the show. Tremendous game last night. Game winner from Eric Bledsoe as the Suns got their first win of the year beating Portland. And it's also a big football weekend that starts tonight with Atlanta and Tampa Bay. So we better get Jimmy Vaccaro in here after a break to take a look at this week's football games. And we'll get a thought from him about the scene last night at the South Point Hotel and Resort Sportsbook. It was pretty wild. They had pictures on Twitter. It was awesome. Brad Sesmatch show on a Thursday. So glad you joined us. Sports360AZ.com, AZCentral.com Sports. Thursday, Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmatch on the Brad Sesmatch Show, Sports360AZ.com, AZCentralSports.com, and in the midst of the Cubs and last night's dramatic Suns win, we get a big football weekend, and as we do each Thursday, our friend Jimmy Vaccaro, the longtime Las Vegas bookmaker who handles things at the Sportsbook at the South Point Resort and Casino, which is right along I-15, just south of the Strip. We're going to be there at Thanksgiving. ASU's women's basketball team's playing in a tournament there. I mentioned last week, my daughter and I are already got our game plan for the Thanksgiving buffet. But Jimmy, before we get into the football weekend, South Point tweeted out pictures of the Sportsbook room last night during the World Series. That had to be quite the scene there last night.
Yeah, obviously, you know, you can't ask for anything better, especially from our side of the counter when you have naturally a weekday and you're just simply jam-packed. And from what I understand, every book in the city was the exact same way. So when you get a break like that, and obviously it was a perfect storm for a great ending, and you know, people came out and bet. Even people who don't bet, it was almost like, you know, betting on the Triple Crown winner just to have it in your pocket. A lot of people showed up just to have a bet on the game, and win, lose, or draw, some of them probably didn't even cash the tickets, just kept them. But it played out well. The money was definitely divided. Every time we moved it up a little bit, we would get some underdog money. When we went the other way, we would get some Cub money. As far as the series was concerned, Jeff, and the whole future book, it was probably one of the better future books that we've seen in quite a while if you're on my side of the counter. Not saying every book did exactly the same way, but we played relatively lucky. As I would use the word lucky. Remember, people have been saying, you know, the Cubs won, the joints in Vegas had to get destroyed. Well, remember, you know, we could have got beat up bad 15 or 20 years ago when we opened up the Cubs 100 and 150 to 1 to win the World Series. They were one of the favorites this year, so the best price you probably got early on was 12 to 1. And any time a favorite wins any type of future book, it can't be that bad. So in this case, we had a fair winner with the Cubs winning. We would have had a big winner if the Indians would have won. But it's nice to go into a situation where you're going to pick up something. And as I said, the game worked both ways. And also what it does, and I hate to keep harping on an old subject, my friend, but sports betting is just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. You can tell by the crowd. And no, not degenerates in the crowd betting. People betting $20, $40, $50. And spending what you would consider a great night out. So there's always that side of the coin, which people don't like to talk about, but I do. But it was a great, great, you know, Wednesday night for the sportsbooks here in Las Vegas.
I'm glad you brought that up because I agree with you. I think there's an image sometimes with sportsbooks that are not always fair, and they're more and more like sports bars anymore nowadays.
Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry, Jeff.
I was just going to transition into the football, and I want to start with tonight's game because I'm a little surprised that Atlanta is not giving away more. They're giving two tonight at Tampa Bay. They're coming off that big win over Green Bay. And Tampa Bay, to me, Jimmy, just hasn't dazzled me. I know they're 3-4, and the NFC South is just kind of up for grabs at the moment. It's a huge game for both teams, but I'm a little surprised that the spread isn't bigger.
Well, with 3.5 and 4 is around the city now, so Atlanta is getting its due justice, and they're obviously playing very well. And Tampa Bay, you can't trust them. They had about 3 solid opportunities to win a big game last week against the Raiders. You saw what happened. The youngster quarterback for Tampa Bay is not having what you would consider a very good year so far. But does he have the does he have the wherewithal to go out there and win the game tonight? You know, what we found out over the years is like the Thursday night game is just so unpredictable, especially if you're coming off just basically 2 or 3 days where you have to prepare. In this case, travel and whatever. So put it this way, my friend, you're not stealing anything if you bet the Falcons tonight. They should be a road favorite. They are relatively high total here, 51.5. You figure to see a lot of points scored in the game. The what we call the overused term, the wise guys will take the 4.5 and 4 probably at a blink, especially the 4.5. But the general public will be all over the Atlanta Falcons, utilizing them. And as we talked about just a few minutes ago, what happens here is like people like to bet early on and put that Thursday night game in their parlays and parlay cards, because naturally, if the Atlanta Falcons cover, well, they got one game in going into Saturday and Sunday already. So it's kind of a give and take, a little cat and mouse game. But trust me, the books tonight will be rooting for Tampa Bay, and we'll see what happens from there.
Jimmy Vaccaro, the odds maker, handles the sports book at the South Point Resort and Hotel in Las Vegas. Again, I mentioned this last week. Guy asked me, if I go to South Point to watch the basketball games, I'm not really into the gaming. Well, they've got so many other things to do there at South Point. Movie theater, bowling center, just goes on and on. Detroit and Minnesota, and I want to get your perspective on this. Minnesota, Norv Turner resigned yesterday as the offensive coordinator. Pat Shurmur takes over. Now, he really can't change a whole lot this close to a game. Even if he got the job Monday, I'm not sure there's much he could change. But does it cause you to go back and rethink things and how you set up that game?
No, not really, my friend. It's a solid 6.5 around the city. And there's no way that Norv Turner resigned. He was probably told, get out of here, or we're just going to fire you. So one or the other. So I think that's what happened. But, one of those little nuggets that you unearth every now and then, and this actually came from a close friend of mine who is someone who just delves into this stuff 1,000%, that Schumer and Bradford were obviously, together when they played before this. So it's
right.
Like, almost like they want to give them that opportunity. The Lions, what can you say? Give and take. But they're still 4-4 for the year. The Vikings started out 5-0. We were crowning them to some degree. They ran into some trouble. I hope they'll go back to the Bradford days when we had all this problem. But 6 is an absolute solid number. It will go up, because what you're going to get here is a Lion team, which you can't trust as far as the public is concerned. And the Minnesota team was like, yes, Jimmy, can't you see they got to bounce back after the travesty in the last 2 weeks? But to answer your question, the coaching change means absolutely nothing. The only coaching change would make any difference if Belichick said I quit. You would see a line.
Yeah.
You would see a line adjustment there real quick, my friend.
Yeah, you'd have some lines at the windows, I guarantee you. All right, now let me. Yep. I guess I bet I'll get the same kind of answer to that. Well, maybe. Let's look at Pittsburgh and Baltimore. Ben Roethlisberger is listed as probable, which to me is a pretty quick turnaround from the kind of injury he had. But that, because it's probable and it's not certain, does that make handicapping this game more difficult?
Well, yes, obviously, because you're getting the territory that's under the Brady Rodgers territory, where you obviously move a game considerably if one of those elite quarterbacks is not playing. I would say probable is about 85% that he'll be out there. And yes, it is in the number. We have the game pick him now. If it was absolutely clear that Roethlisberger wasn't playing and the youngster Landry Jones was playing, you would see the Baltimore Ravens at least a 4.5 point favorite. So yes, but still a guessing game. Mike Tomlin has a little of Bill Belichick in him. He's a pretty nasty when it comes to the media also, and he doesn't give up anything. But the people that I speak to is like, they put it this way, nothing is absolute, just ask the Cleveland Indians. but I think Roethlisberger will be there, and the game figures to be right where that pick him.
Jimmy Vaccaro at the South Point Resort handles the sports book. He joins us as he does each week on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jeff Munn for Brad. I don't want to overlook the colleges. ASU is off this weekend, so the college schedule probably hasn't gotten a lot of attention here. But Arizona does go up to Washington State. The Cougars got another win last week. They're 6-2. It's in Pullman. But just in terms of coaching philosophy, you know, obviously Mike Leach's offense is very much like what Rich Rodriguez would like to run when he has a healthy roster. This has the look of a game that could the point total could go way, way up.
Whatever it is, it'll be high. It'll be 3 points for you at game time. And boy, this would be hard to take if you're an Arizona fan. This game, we posted up way back when, was close to a pick 'em. Now, you can get 17 points with Arizona. It's fairly obvious that Arizona is not having what you would consider a very, very good year. But Leach is one of those guys, too. You can't pin them down. 1 week, they play a little bit of defense, and some weekends they don't. And no matter what you do when you go up against them, you better score points yourself, because obviously this guy is going to run 110 plays from the line of scrimmage. But remember this. There's only one game this weekend. It's Alabama and LSU, which makes for a great schedule. Make no mistake about it. It's a great time slot, 5 o'clock. People will be there all day waiting for this game. And, you know, it's been a little two-way action. Alabama on the road, 7-point favorite. One thing I'll just insert and tell you, just looking at the stuff I was looking at this morning, at this part of the season, this point of the season, I can't recall any team that was power rated at least 7 points over the next 2, 3, or 4 guys in line. In Alabama, power rated at least 7 to 8 points over any team they would play anywhere, anytime. Very, very seldom do you see something like this, where obviously we understand that Alabama is good, but I've never seen that much of a difference between power rating team 1 and power rating team 2, 3, and 4. They're an absolute juggernaut, and that itself will make a great Saturday as far as people turning out at the book.
Now, let me ask you, let me go big picture on this. We had the first college football playoff rankings come out this week, and it's a little bit like the BCS to me, that the teams on the outside are still taking the attitude that maybe we can pick up style points if we run a team out of the building. And I'll give you a good example. Tonight, Oklahoma, and I don't really think Oklahoma's right on the doorstep of the playoff, but if they keep rolling along, they get 2 losses if things break a certain way. But they're at Iowa State tonight. And setting up that game, do you have to take into consideration this team's going to try to go for a massive blowout if they get the chance?
Yeah, it means another half a point or a point, because we understand that. And it has shown over the past, especially about the past 15, 20 years, it really reared its ugly head way back when Penn State was going in to play somebody, a very weak sister, I think maybe Indiana or Illinois. And they won the game, 13-10 or whatever. It's a very low-scoring game. And Penn State got penalized, and the ratings got pushed back about 3 slots, only because Paterno at that time was just trying to get his guys through the game. And it cost him a bigger bowl bid at the time. And it almost said, because it was well talked about, I remember it, but it was like, okay, if that's going to be the case, then if we got somebody down like Michigan playing Rutgers, if it's 50-0, if they go to 78-0, big stinking deal. There is nobody that cares about anybody. And yes, style points do matter. It matters because the people who really don't delve into this, the people who really don't watch the games, only watch the final score.
Right.
And when the final score pops into their head, they move teams up and down. But trust me, Oklahoma's in the race. I got them, there's only 3 or 4 teams I think would be a favorite over them on the road. So anything can happen. Louisville is absolutely a live dog, but obviously a lot's going to happen. Even with LSU, what if they upset Alabama? Then, wow, throw the ball up in the air. But look for a great November, my friend.
All right, lastly, let me go back to baseball for a second. The season's over. How soon will it be? I know that we have free agency to go through. We have the winter meetings and whatever trades may take place. How soon before you start putting odds out on 2017? And I mean, obviously, the Cubs are going to be prohibitive favorites just because they're so young and talented.
Right.
But what do you have to wait for? What do you have to watch for before you start setting up the odds on 2017?
Nothing. We'll put them up very, very shortly, as will most books in the state here, only because the only thing we won't put up naturally is season win totals. As far as like division and what that stuff and to win World Series, don't blink, they'll be up there before you know it, only because the market has driven us there in the last 15 years. Well, we used to wait and wait and wait on those things. Now we put them up there, and it's more for recreational people coming in, you know, and who won't visit the casinos maybe for a year or whatever, if they want to know that they have their ticket on their team already. So believe me, they'll be up before you know it.
Jimmy, appreciate the time. I'll say it again. My daughter's 17, so obviously she doesn't care anything about what goes on in the casino. She loves South Point because there's so many things to do, and it gets my highest recommendation. I am going to come see you when we get there in a couple of weeks, and I appreciate
I'll
the time this week.
Friend.
I'll come look for
okay,
you.
Okay, buddy.
You got it.
Okay.
Jimmy Vaccaro, the sports odds maker at South Point Hotel Casino in Las Vegas. Again, and I, you know, ASU women's basketball is not a regularly discussed topic on this show, but if you happen to be an ASU women's basketball fan and you're thinking about going up there, I highly recommend it. Great spot. When we come back, we're going to talk a lot about baseball. Eric Sorensen says he has something he wants to run by me about baseball. He says I won't like it. I might surprise him. I might agree with him. Who knows? That's what we call in the business a tease. Stay with us. Find out what it is that we're talking about next on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Brad Sesmatt Show on a Thursday. Jeff Munn for Brad. You get us through sports360az.com or azcentralsports.com. Sports can be cruel at times. And I bring that up because last night at Talking Stick Resort Arena, those in attendance probably were torn. You've got Game 7 of the World Series, the Cubs and the Indians, and it turns out to be this riveting, dramatic back-and-forth contest. Meanwhile, right in front of them, Portland and the Suns played last night, and they, too, delivered a dramatic game. The Suns thought they had it won near the end of regulation, and Portland got a layup on just a flat-out defensive breakdown with 1 second to go in regulation. That takes us into overtime. The game is tied at 1:15. The ball is in the hands of Eric Bledsoe, and here's how Steve Albert described it.
To Bledsoe, 5 seconds. Bledsoe with three. Bledsoe with one. Got to put it up for the game. He did it! Eric Bledsoe at the buzzer beats the Trailblazers in overtime. And they celebrate in Phoenix.
They sure do. Tyson Chandler, 18 rebounds, 6 points. Bledsoe ended up with 20. Warren with 27. The Suns win at 118-115, first win of the year. And again, a tremendous, dramatic ball game. And it's just one of those deals. It's unfortunate. And when I worked for the Suns, we went through this a couple of times, where there would be some dramatic game going on in the middle of a Suns game. What do? Well, working the game, you have to concentrate on the game. And I'm sure the fans were probably scrambling back and forth in front of TVs and what have you. And when I worked at the D-backs, it had the same thing. I remember I'll do this real quick. In 2000, the Suns won a playoff game at Sacramento on a buzzer beater, right in the middle of us playing a game. And you could hear this huge cheer. And you thought, wait a minute, there's nothing going on the field. And then you realize, oh, Suns game winner. All right, so they'll play at New Orleans tomorrow night against the Pelicans, and a great win and a badly needed one for the Suns and Earl Watson and his crew. All right, I want to spend the majority of the segment talking baseball. Eric Sorensen says he has something he wants to tell me about the sport that
okay.
I won't like hearing.
Here's the deal.
Yes.
And I know that you – would you consider yourself a baseball purist? I think you would,
yes,
right?
Yes, I am.
The playoffs this year were, in my opinion, the best they've been in several years. And that's not to say that they usually aren't very intriguing, because they are.
Yes.
But this year, it seemed like there were so many sub-stories and such good baseball and strategy and the drama, and you had the Cubs, blah, 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 blah. I wonder when – this is exactly what baseball wanted.
Yeah, I would agree.
This is exactly what baseball needed. Now, please, please break away from your old tradition and shorten the season. Less dead time, more playoffs, better baseball.
Well, when you say less dead time, are you talking about dead time within the game?
No.
Okay.
I'm talking about, let's see, June,
yeah,
July, August, when really, honestly, Jeff, inside those 3 months of baseball, there is so little intrigue. And that's one of the reasons why people get turned off by the sport. Less is more. Play less games. Because in the end, I think you're going to get better baseball in the end.
Yeah, and I agree with you that I wouldn't mind seeing them go to 154 like they used to do pre-1962.
Lower.
Problem with that is it starts to attack the integrity or the opportunity for players to establish records. I guess the flip side of the argument is if you didn't play as many games, there's not as much risk of injury. Players might actually stay healthier and play longer in their careers.
Why don't you start it a little later and end it a little earlier? Last night was almost ruined by rain. And
yeah,
I know it can rain at any time
August,
of the year.
Yeah.
But you have some of these games when the schedule gets pushed into November and it's 39 degrees and you're playing an outdoor game. That's sort of a disservice to the players in the game, isn't it?
Yeah, when Cleveland hosted the series against the Marlins in 97, it was winter-like in Cleveland.
And sometimes in the beginning of the season in cities like Chicago and the Midwest, it's still really cold in April.
Right.
So if you took spring training and pushed it back 2 or 3 weeks and then took the end of the season and pushed it up 2 or 3 weeks, I just think that'd be the perfect... But I'm new school baseball. I'm not old school baseball.
I would go with you to this point. I think spring training's too long. I'd say shorten the amount of spring training games to about 2 weeks. Now, I realize in places like the Northeast and the Midwest, starting a baseball season in the third week of March, you're going to run into a lot of weather issues. But I'd still try to do it that way, get you out probably the third, fourth week of September into the playoffs.
The Cubs and Indians are going to have about 2.5 months, and then they're going to have to start thinking of really starting, you know, after Christmas, it'll all ramp back
up.
Well,
they're going to have...
But what's today, the 3rd or 4th of November? And the season just ended.
Well, and it's starting earlier next year because of the World Baseball Classic, which also is something... I think it's a great event, but there is no ideal time to hold the World Baseball Classic. You just can't do it. You can't do it in November. You can't do it in February. And it's a great event, but there's just no ideal time to stage it. And by the way, the Cubs front office has organizational meetings on Monday. They have the parade tomorrow, they think. They're trying to arrange it for tomorrow. And then they got to start preparing for the GM meetings, which are next week. And I'm not complaining about that. I think this sport is in tremendous shape. And whether or not the Cubs had won, there was an article earlier a couple of days ago, would baseball be better off if the Cubs had lost and continue this curse and the national story? No. I think baseball got a great boost off what happened last night because the game was so riveting.
40 million people watched the game.
A 25.7 rating, which
unbelievable.
Is off
Good
the
for
charts.
Them.
And I think it's great. And this sport, I really believe, in this industry is in great shape. I mean, just think about this for a minute. If you said there was a pro sports league that was getting ripped for constantly making mistakes and not paying attention to trends in the industry, and you've got a commissioner that's under fire, you would think baseball, right? No, that's been a lot of chatter lately about the NFL, and it's just interesting. Okay, I've got about a minute. Here's what I would do with baseball if they gave me the power. Bye-bye, replay. I understand you want to get the calls right. It's taking too long. It's taking too long. Interleague play, 2 weeks in June, out. And I realize to do that, you've got to get an even number of teams in both leagues. You can either do it one of two ways. You can either expand by two teams, and I think the sport's ready for that in terms of it won't dilute the talent much, or you just send an American League team back to the National League and get it back the way it was. Detroit finishing up the regular season in Atlanta is ludicrous. It's ludicrous. So shorten interleague play. And if the game is concerned, and enforce the pace of play rules. Enforce them. Get players back in the box. And I would go to a pitch clock. I've been out to a bunch of fall league games this year where they use a pitch clock. It works, kids. It works. And I know that there are minor league pitchers coming up now that have used the pitch clock and they're used to going at a certain pace. But there's still a lot of guys. They're taking 50 seconds between pitches. Either this thing gets enforced or it doesn't. And if you want to improve the pace of play, that's one way to do it. Otherwise, I think this sport is in tremendous shape. And let me just say this. I said I was going to mention this. I'll do it in 15 seconds. The Cubs championship is an abject lesson to every other organization in baseball that's not a championship contender. There is no substitute for patience, building through the draft, using trades, and using free agency as a supplement to your roster, not the power gear in your roster. I'm not directing this at any one team, so please don't try to assume that I'm trying to say something to somebody, because that's not what I'm doing here. But the Cubs should prove to every other organization in baseball they did it the right way. Kudos to the Ricketts family. They got out of the way after they hired Theo. They knew, and Theo told them from the top, we're going to have some years of pain, but it'll pay off. And you could see Theo putting the pieces together gradually through 2012, 2013, 2014. I didn't approve of what he did in hiring Joe Maddon. If you look Rick Renteria in the eye and give him your word that he's coming back as manager, you stick to your word. And I thought what Theo did was despicable to Rick Renteria. But I understood why he did it, and it paid off. So while I have, on a personal level, I have a complete bad taste in my mouth for what he did to Rick Renteria, I understand why he did it. Bill Gutekunst is coming up next. We're going to talk about a Cub fan, in addition to three really riveting movies that he has reviews on this week. So stay right where you are. Brad Sesmatch Show, Sports360AZ.com, AZCentralSports.com. I go to the movies with AZ Central film critic Bill Gutekunst joins us each week at this time on the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Jeff Munnen for Brad. And Goody, we have three really powerful movies in different ways to talk about this week. And we'll start first with a film that I was, in just watching the trailer, really grabbed me. Moonlight, which is, just from watching the trailer, strikes me as a pretty powerful societal statement type of movie. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's terrific. I gave it 5 stars, which I think it's only the second one I've done this year. I don't do that very often, but it's great. Sounds like kind of a downer. It's like you have this kid, and it tells about his life in three different stages and different actors play him. But in some ways, it's kind of like the movie Boyhood. I mean, it's him growing up. But he's this young black kid in a really tough part of Miami. His dad is gone. His mom is a crack addict. The only mentor figure he has is a drug dealer. But there's still some hope in this thing, and it's just so well done and so well acted that, I mean, you're sucked in, and it's great.
In watching it, I'm thinking to myself, okay, this is going to be one of those films that it goes a certain amount of time. Let me just throw a figure out, 90 minutes, but you're going to come out emotionally drained and feel like you were there for 3 hours.
Yeah, sort of.
Not in a bad way. I mean, in a good way.
Yeah. They do a really good. It's a really well made movie. I mean, it's really beautiful, and of course, Miami is not the worst place in the world to shoot a movie. But and there's a lot of the ocean and stuff. They get under the beach, but there's a lot of the different parts of Miami that, you know, I remember when I was there for the Super Bowl one year, and I got lost, and I ended up in all these places that I was like, whoa, I did not know Miami was like that, and this has some of that, but it's really. I think that if you want to, next February or March when they're talking about the Oscars, I think that you want to see this, because I think they're going to be talking about this one a lot. I think it's going to be pretty well represented.
Yeah, remind me sometime to tell you about my travels to Miami. That too has been a bit of an adventure. The movie Hacksaw Ridge. This is a Mel Gibson film. And I'm going to ask a silly question up front. This is a story based on actual events, is it not?
It is, and it's about this guy from Virginia who was very quiet, and he was a Seventh-day Adventist. He was a conscientious objector, but he wanted to serve in the Army, and he did, but he would not touch a gun, and he ended up winning the Medal of Honor. just because it's incredible. They showed the heroism and stuff in the movie, and I looked the guy up, and man, they only did about half of it. The guy was incredible, the stuff that he did. And it's an interesting movie in a couple of ways. It's a movie about peace and about, you know, that sort of thing, but it is incredibly violent, which is not a surprise coming from Mel Gibson. I mean, you need to think, it's rated R, but if you're going to take a kid or something like this, it's a really nice story, but oh my God. The thing I think I read in my review was it's kind of like watching, because the home stuff is really old fashioned, real old timey. It's well done, but it's a real throwback, and I think I wrote that it's sort of like watching Leave It to Beaver, and then 20 minutes later, Eddie Haskell's head just gets blown off. It's just there's a real. But I talked to Gibson, and I never know what to expect from these people. And we did not get to the chance where we talked about all of his troubles, because that kind of conversation ended as soon as like I hesitated to ask a question. You know, but he was really smart, and I mean just incredibly detailed about making movies, and that was interesting to me, because you think of these people in one term, you know, in one way, and I kind of think of him as this sort of troubled guy who's coming back, but to him it's like, no, I made this movie and I spent a ton of time doing it, you know. I always think that's fascinating.
There are two things I want to get. Number one, if judging from the technology used in the time period pieces, it was World War II.
Yes.
Okay. The other thing is the sergeant. That's Vince Vaughn, is it not?
That is Vince Vaughn.
Wow. You know what? And that's just, I just saw a snippet, but I've always thought Vince Vaughn would be a really good dramatic actor, because he kind of straddles that line because of his just kind of his energy between comedy and drama.
Well, he does that here too a little bit. I mean, he can be, because he's the drill instructor, and you know, he makes up all these nicknames for people, and he's pretty tough. But he's also, one of the things that's interesting about the way he plays it is he doesn't want the guy in there because he thinks that he's, you know, dangerous to the company and would be in battle. But he is genuinely kind of curious about it. He's not completely dismissive. He's just kind of like, you know, I wonder what it's about. And I wonder if it could work. It's really kind of an interesting performance. It's a good movie, but boy, I mean, you know, he wanted to show us the horrors of war, and then show them again, and then show them again, and then when we'd seen them all, he wanted to show them again.
Just in case you didn't get it the first time. Our last movie today is Doctor Strange, which is, as soon as you see the logo, Marvel Studios, you kind of know where it's going. Now, I don't claim to be an Avengers Marvel characters guy, but Doctor Strange, I assume, has some connection somewhere to the Avengers.
Not yet, but he will.
Oh, okay. Okay.
this is his origin movie. And it's I actually liked it. It's much more mystical. He ends up being kind of a sorcerer kind of guy. But he's like, and it's Benedict Cumberbatch. The cast is like Benedict Cumberbatch, Edgy Ofor, Tilda Swinton. I think in my review I said something like, it's like the Royal Shakespeare Company does a Stan Lee movie. It's like a great cast of like these really serious actors, but it's a lot of fun. And I love Cumberbatch. I mean, if you've ever seen Sherlock on PBS, I mean, the guy's great. I interviewed him once, and I actually told him this story. But my now 18-year-old daughter, we were watching it, and after about 5 minutes, she said, "This show is boring and he's ugly." And after about 20 minutes, she said, "This show is great and he is so hot."
Well,
because he's got this real intelligence. And I told him that, and he said, his response was, "Yeah, we get them all eventually."
I love the one line, too, where I guess an antagonist says to him, he gets his name wrong and says, "It's strange, actually," and the antagonist says, "Well, who am I to judge?"
Maybe. Yeah. Who am I to judge?
I'm not into the Marvel stuff. I got as far as Spider-Man, couldn't go any further, which was a great film, but that's for another topic for another day. Let me take a little different direction here. I want to get a couple of thoughts from you on things, and I'm going to start first with some light stuff. A very quick thought about Bill Murray in this respect. When he sang "Take Me Out to the Ball Game" Friday night, a lot of people went on Twitter and used the term "American Treasure" to Bill Murray. Not something I had thought of up to this point, but I think about it further, and you think about the generation of comics in the mid to late 50s, the Jack Bennies, the Bob Hopes, the George Burns, and then you think, who follows that? And I guess for our generation, Bill Murray is kind of, I guess, in that class, and I'd never thought of it before.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's one of those guys that you, I mean, when is the last time Bill Murray made a comedy? You know,
it's been a while.
But he had those roles that if you grew up, you know, your hair age, and you know, just think of it, Stripes, Caddyshack, Ghostbusters, you know, those are just the movies that you watch again and again and again. I think that Caddyshack has got to be the most quoted movie of all time.
Pretty close.
Certainly by anybody who's ever played golf. And I mean, but the other thing about him is just that he's so unique. I mean, I talked to some guys, to Robert Duvall and the guy who directed the movie that they were both in, and the way that, like, you get in touch with him, he doesn't have an agent. If you want him to be in your movie, you send a script to a P.O. box and you wait.
Yeah, I've heard that.
and maybe he calls you, and maybe he doesn't. And, you know, and I think that one of the things that's nice about him is he's a Chicago guy. You know, I've all of a sudden on Facebook and Twitter, a lot of the people that I did not know were such Cubs fans are suddenly Cubs fans.
Eddie Vedder is one that comes to mind. I've got about a minute left, and I hate to do this in a capsule form, but also next Tuesday is the election. This is the last time we'll talk before that. As a media observer, this election obviously has been way off the charts. When we look back at this 20 years from now, is this going to be a turning point in how American media covers presidential elections?
I hope not. And I hope that we learn from it. I think that we let Trump get away with far too much for far too long because we didn't take him seriously. And, you know, he didn't think he was going to win. There's this thing, the thing I've been preaching for reading with what I've written for about a year is this idea of false equivalency. Like, you know, we're so used to this he said, she said kind of journalism that we're afraid to just out and out say when he tells a lie, that it's a lie. And that's not good. That's not good for journalism. It's not good for America. I mean, it's just, it can't go on. And so I hope that instead of, you know, like a trend downward, I hope it's more of a wake-up call. But, you know, we'll see.
And the interesting, and we can talk about this next time I do this with you, about how, if Trump wins, how the media covers him from there. We're out of time. I'll just leave you with this. Tom Poston was the original choice to play Maxwell Smart. You can think about that for a while and get back to me on it.
I love Tom Poston. But
yeah, Bill, I appreciate the time. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks.
Bill Gutekunst, AZ Central film critic, who joins us each week. Again, that Hacksaw Ridge movie and Moonlight, all three of them this week. Very powerful movies. You got lots to choose from this week in terms of your movie choices. Brad Sesmatch show on a Thursday. You can get it on, obviously, sports360az.com. We partner with azcentral.com sports. There's a lot of ways you can catch the show. We're awfully glad you do it each and every day. And you're probably glad you do it, too, because this is a great way to find out what's going on in sports and a whole lot of other areas. Thanks for being with us on a Thursday.